Oh, Saru, you have always seen something in me. Even when others didn't, even when I didn't. And I look at you now, who you've become. Probably the bravest soul I've ever known.
Thank you, Michael.
How the hell am I gonna find another you?
You do not need another me. You need a new number one.
Right. Well, Tilly wants to go back to the Academy after this. I've got candidates on Discovery and across Starfleet.
If I may offer a piece of advice.
Sure.
You are a force, Michael. I believe you would be aided by one who is as well. Someone like Mr. Booker, now that I think of it.
You're not suggesting I make Booker.
I simply mean to say that he stands his ground, even in difficult moments.
Strange New Takes. I'm your host, Nat Karnick, and with me on our last day on the jobs, right before we retire, turn in our badge and our gun and go on vacations with our wives for the first time in our entire lives. I really hope I make it through this day, and I hope you do too, are
Bill Woywod,
Adam Bowen,
Reed Dressler,
and Emily Bowen Marler. Welcome to Strange New Takes. Today, we will be covering the first two episodes of Season 5 of Discovery, Red Directive, and Under the Twin Moons.
Follow us on social media. That's at Strange New Takes on Facebook, Instagram, and that's it.
Threads, we're on Threads.
It doesn't say that in the thing.
Not yet.
I can't be held accountable to this.
Okay. And I want you to tell your friends about the pod, tell your family about the pod, go back and find that kid you went to kindergarten with, tell him about the pod.
His name was Casey.
Tell Casey about the pod.
There will be spoilers in this episode. We're going to spoil the new Discovery episodes. I'm sure we're going to spoil episodes that came out 30, 40 years ago. And Adam, you better watch out because we may be spoiling ones you haven't even seen.
I did not see the second episode, so.
Well, you've been warned, Adam.
Okay.
Oh, Lordy.
Well, you just, Adam, referenced the thing that I
Don't do it.
I was going to share, and it looks like Emily's dealing with some times right now.
My cat problem. Is about to jump on me or my computer or both, and I'm like, don't do it. Anyway.
Well, I was going to reference that Adam didn't get to see the second episode where Saru is basically that like old detective that I was referencing before. Like it's his last day on the job. And so we will try to split the discussion into two where we talk about the first episode first and the second episode second. And Adam can hop off for the second part so we don't spoil him too badly. But unfortunately, before that, we do have to go through our Strange New Takes where, all's fair in love, war, and Strange New Takes, as they say.
Yep.
People say that. They've been saying it for years.
It's a saying. It's a thing.
Yeah.
We've all heard it.
Yeah.
We've all heard it. It's been said. I invented it years ago. Okay.
All right. So who's got a Strange New Take for me?
Well, I guess I'll go first. I don't know if those of you who don't live in Missouri have this experience, but we have experienced, I think, three false springs so far, and I'm just really ready for no more winter. So we had some temperatures below freezing this week, and I keep worrying it's going to freeze all the little buds off the trees, and it's going to be so sad, but I think they're surviving. But yeah, I'm ready. Today's beautiful. I'm ready for it to stay that way for a little while, so That's my strange new take is, just that the weather in Missouri is very mercurial.
I mean, then so. it's going to cause tornadoes again, just like it did like earlier this week.
Well, hey, that's beats like what they have an earthquake in New Jersey this week. So,
oh, yeah. I had no idea that was.
And the total eclipse is on Monday. And so I guess the apocalypse is coming. So I don't know. Anyone else going to go see the eclipse?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I guess it's like going. I think it's like slightly too far out of the way to just like bike there or whatever, like we did last time.
Yeah.
Not that I would use a bicycle in this day and age, but Yeah.
Fun times.
It the sun might look different, I'm expecting.
Cool.
Well, do you have something for the episode?
Oh, I forgot. I just did my strange new take for life, but I didn't do one for the episode. My strange new take for the episode is that the first episode had a very Star Wars feel at some points, and the second episode felt more like Star Trek. So, you know, they had some different moods and vibes going in these episodes. But I do have to say, overall, I thought they were solid episodes. So
we'll see if people agree later. Mm-hmm. Dot. Okay. Well, anyway, I'll go next. First of all, I just want to say, like, who planned these solar eclipses? 20 years apart in America? Like, that's just poor planning, bad branding. I just want to say, as a marketing expert, if you want people to buy into your product, you should give them access a little bit more, you know, like, of a taste. Also, part of the country only gets half of it. What the hell? What kind of business did that? It's just bad planning. I'm just saying, the progenitors could have done better.
We just had one 6 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, in St. Louis, we get both of them. So no complaints over here.
All right. Yeah, I guess. All right. For the episode, I just want to say there's this thing, and it happens in multiple TV shows. So it's not just there where, you know, you kind of wonder, like, did they have a photographer at all the key moments that happened? Because, like, Kovic is, like, showing Picard, showing the progenitor, showing, like, all the stuff. And it's just, like, while they were having the final scene of the episode, The Chase and The Next Generation, what we didn't see was the guy going, click, 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 click.
Yeah,
taking key photographs that could then be used later. In, you know, key moments in other TV shows.
Encounter Farpoint where Riker just watches what happened 15 minutes ago.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And there's actually one in the West Wing where there's a photo of the president's daughter that I forget somebody has, like either the president or her boyfriend. And it's her sitting in a diner in a scene in a previous episode. So again, you're like, oh, they were having this wonderful intimate conversation in the diner. No, so like, click, 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 click. Taking photos, which, yeah, you know, apparently it's just a thing. It's just a thing.
When you sign up to be in Starfleet, you sign this document that says you agree to photographers capturing every single aspect of your life from then on out. So
Starfleet budget, 99% starships, 1% photographers.
For every away team, right, somebody's assigned. Yeah, it's right. Usually Worf.
He's got an artistic photographer soul inside that he doesn't let out a lot. Yeah.
I mean, so like in universe, we have a canon explanation of this is that Romulans have the technology to, for some reason, recreate everything that happened like on a random night several weeks ago, just by entering the room.
That's right.
Yeah. I tried to forget that.
Is that the Picard one with that kid?
Or is it's hard.
Oh, it's Picard.
Yeah, okay. Picard episode 2, I think.
Yeah. Of season 2.
Gotcha.
Or season 1. Yeah.
No, season 1. It was.
That was the episode that
my wife was like, I'm done. She never watched another episode.
It actually was not, like, even close to, like, the low point either.
Yeah.
Like, actually, that, you know.
Oh.
Middle of the road.
Yeah. Adam, I think you're
wrong. Now it's my chance. For real life, today was the first time that we tried out solid foods with Eva. she's a bit on the that's my daughter. She's a bit on the not great at sitting up phase. So we're starting later than probably the pediatrician wanted us to, but. I don't know. I was surprised that rice cereal appears to just be milk with like dusty stuff in it. It does not appear to be like actually solid food. So I feel a little bit cheated that my first solid food experience with her was not actually solid food. So yeah.
You could give her some avocados. Those are a big hit.
There we go. Yeah, yeah.
They love avocados. At least mine did.
Yeah, yeah.
Not anymore, but he did when he was a baby.
It's not one of the 5 approved foods. Let's see. But for the episode, I feel like my sense of like what budgets are or like should be for shows like this are completely unmoored, because this feels like an episode, the one that I saw, felt like they just had like, oh shit, what am I going to do with this extra $10 million? Okay, let's have the ships like crash into each other, into the planet, and then like, oh, let's have her get thrown out into space while having a whole bunch of things explode around her, and then like, oh, we need to get a tractor beam sequence. Just like, a lot of them were very, felt inconsequential to the actual plot of the episode, and it's just wild that they just like had that this got approved. I feel weird like arguing for like better accounting at Paramount, but maybe they'd be in better situations than they are now.
Adam's like, bring back the original series budget.
Where's the obviously reused shit? They did have the one saving, which is the Infinity Room is just a blank space. So they just turn on the white pixels in their whatever that place is.
The AR wall.
So they just it was rebooting at the time or whatever, and they just took advantage.
It's funny now. I can always see when they're using the AR wall now. Like, it's just obvious. Not like, that it's not a cool piece of technology. It's just
that's
totally
why Federation HQ doesn't have anything. It's just black floor with nothing around.
All right. Are you good, Adam?
We're good.
My real life strange new take, it's less a take than what I'm trying to do to my life, which is wake up a little earlier. So I have this alarm clock, but it has to force me to get up. And you can put different challenges to wake up. So initially I was just going to do a step one, and I'd get up and I'd take 20 steps and I go, you know what? I can go back to sleep and wake up later, and I go right back to sleep. And then I added a thing where you scan a barcode, and I have a barcode in another room and scan it. And then went, you know what? I could go right back to sleep. And so
you're hacking your alarm.
And so recently there was one you could add a challenge where I was squats, and I put like 50 squats on one of them. And so I'm getting up, scanning the barcode, then I have to do 25 squats. Then I have to add like this math problem. Then I had to do another 50 squats, which I didn't think about before I set that. So today, anytime I have to stand up, it's just incredible pain. Because, and I didn't feel it that first day, but going from no squats to 75 squats, my body is really upset with me about that. But I did stay awake. So
there you go. I was thinking that maybe you like, this is an app that actually can train insomnia out of you, because you just learn to go back to sleep after basically anything. Well,
and we were getting there. And I will say that today I woke up 3 minutes before my alarm and was able to turn it off and stay awake before had to do another. I don't know if I could have survived another 75 squats. I probably need to reduce the number because I woke up like, ow. My Star Trek strange new take. So I listened to the last episode that you all did, and you were talking about Discovery and what makes it good and bad. And I don't want to, because that'll take forever. But my strange new take is that Discovery has a huge problem with trying to explain things after they happen and not necessarily setting them up. And I think that that is one of the things that people bounce off of a lot and don't realize it. So they come up with nonsense problems. I mean, we all know that people are really weird about Discovery, and they have all the dumb, bigoted stuff that is all nonsense.
Hey, I just don't like Michael Burnham, okay? I don't know why. I can't tell you. There's just something there, okay? There's just something. Okay, I'm joking.
There's so many people that it's like, all right, yeah. And then there's other people that's like, I don't know what's wrong. I think that there is a level where Discovery doesn't know how to set up things. And I think that Discovery's strongest thing is its heartfelt nature. So, Notch, last time you were talking about how you felt like there was a tone shift in season one between part one of season one and part two of season one of Discovery. That is the exact time when I got into Discovery, because I did not care for the first half of Discovery at all. It was a chore to watch them. I'm like, all right, another one. And then Saru gets to the Pavans, and I got the show because that was one of the most open-hearted. Saru's never felt peace in his life, and these creatures are making him feel peace. And I was like, I get this show now. And I think Discovery is at its best when it does that, and at its worst when it has something that it then needs to explain for like 3 minutes. So in season four, which we know got racked by COVID issues and stuff, but the episode of Examples with the prison planet, what's his name? Lieutenant Commander Reese. Yeah. Okay. He's like, Saru, could I help these people? And Saru's like, yes. So no conflict there, which could have been great. But instead he's like, yes. And then after he helps the people, he's like, I just wanted to tell you my whole backstory on why I wanted to help these people.
Like right when they're standing at that like gate and like everything's going to blow up. And
I assume they were just going to kill him immediately.
And it's like, it's like, and if you wanted that backstory, what you do is you put it in the conflict where he's like, Saru, I want to help these people. And Saru's like, absolutely not. You need to do blah, blah, blah. And he's like, don't you understand, Saru? My family, right? And then Saru would be like, you're on it. You're on the mission. But instead, it's like all out of order. And how? So you just get this long, and Saru's just standing there smiling while he's telling him. I think that that is Discovery's biggest issue. And I think we were able to see it really clearly in season four because COVID wrecked everything. So characters are just standing in places explaining things. But I saw it a little bit in these episodes, and I want to get into that later. But that's my Star Trek Discovery strange new take.
There we go.
Okay. So my first strange new take, a lot of you probably know this already, but I was surprised pleasantly to be watching a different TV show called Dark Winds, which is a crime drama based on the Tony Hillerman books with the Navajo police chief Joe Leaphorn and Jim G solving crimes. Cool show. And the second season, there's a character played by Jeri Ryan. So I've literally, I don't think, ever seen her in anything except for Star Trek. So
fine.
And yeah,
Boston
it was cool.
Public.
It
was
good. Oh, yeah, she was in Boston.
Oh, yeah, I forgot
she
about
was a
that.
Teacher
never
in
saw
Boston
it, but
Public.
I knew that that was a thing.
And then Shatner was in Boston Legal.
Right.
Very different show.
Yeah. For this episode, I mean, Reed, I'm going to save it for maybe never, but there's a lot intrigued. I can say about how humor and Discovery or lack thereof, which I think is actually important for Star Trek. And man, such a missed opportunity. So Maul and Locke go to meet Fred. They kill him. Then Burnham and Book follow. They walk into the room and she like, you know, Burnham to Discovery. I was just waiting for them to say, Fred's dead. But they're like, no, Fred's deceased. Fred has been shot. Fred, you know, it's like, what? You didn't say Fred's dead?
But Bill, there was one really strange joke in the first episode. Did you feel that? Michael's like floating in space and then she gets hit by that piece of junk and is like, ow, that hurt or something like that. Like it was so weird because it's Discovery just, like, never does that tone and then out of nowhere does like cartoon slapstick. Yeah.
I feel like her moments where she's like, I'm Courier Burnham a little bit where she's kind of going gung-ho solo type stuff. Like they try to insert that a little bit because I remember feeling that in episode one of season four where she and Book are like trying to do that negotiation, then things go sideways in a funny way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
It could use more of that. Yeah.
let's dive into talking about these two episodes. I'm gonna read the summaries to y'all very quickly as I possibly can. The first episode, Captain Burnham and USS Discovery are sent to retrieve a mysterious 800-year-old Romulan vessel until the artifact hidden inside is stolen, leading to an epic chase. Meanwhile, Saru is offered the position of a lifetime.
See what they did there.
And Tilly's efforts to help pull her into a tangled web of secrecy. That's not really a finished sentence. Anyway, second second episode summary. On Saru's last mission as Captain Burnham's number one, the team ventures to a seemingly abandoned planet to hunt for what might be the greatest treasure in the galaxy. All right. So, I was ready to be like, Discovery's up to its same old shit after the first, like, quarter of the first episode, where they sent a drunk crew on an extremely important mission. Was there anybody else who was like, wasn't there a single other starship? Wasn't there like a single other shift? Anybody else on the entire like universe who could have gone instead of all of these people who've been drinking copious amounts of alcohol?
It's because of the spore drive.
Yeah, but also there was. That's what Captain Ransom or whatever his name
Raider,
is.
Rainer.
I mean, I assume he's going to be evil, so I'll just occupy the same space in my head. But, yeah, so he would have just been there, like, 12 minutes later or whatever. And, yeah.
Because they have some... Now, they did talk... Now, okay, I can't remember because I didn't do a rewatch. Did they... This other drive that won out over the spore drive, were they talking about that in the last...
That is the pathway drive. I think The only thing we've really learned about it is that the USS Voyager J has a pathway drive.
Oh, okay.
And now we've said that it like won over the spore drive.
Okay, so there wasn't like
so
a
it's apparently
there wasn't
like, good.
Oh, kitty. There wasn't a big thing about it last season. It was just a
no. It was okay. Just like I think like Saru was maybe going to be captain of the USS Voyager J, or they were like trying to figure out who would be, and they mentioned that it has a pathway drive. So just like there are pathway drives, there are quantum slipstream drives, there's one spore drive.
It's a Chekhov's pathway drive, right? It'll play some role at some point.
Yeah, maybe. I always have to go with the out of universe explanation, but you know they had to do that because they like the show needs to only have one spore drive, right? Discovery has to be special to explain the issue you just brought up.
Why they send a junk crew?
Right. So if they could reverse engineer the spore drive and then every ship had one, it would kind of like ruin the show, so
they wouldn't be important anymore.
I thought with how they were talking about it in the first, like at the beginning, that they were actually not going to use the spore drive anymore because it was like, he's talking about how like he's now what the hell is this? His official position is like scientific luminary or something stupid like that.
Oh yeah,
and that they couldn't find another navigator, or he needs to solve the navigator problem. And I don't know. It was making me feel like, oh, are we like even fully doing away with it like in the show, and Discovery won't do that, but no, it does.
But basically the experimental technology is gone, right? So they would have to invest a whole bunch of money into like recreating it. And so they're basically like, or money or whatever counts as like time and effort or whatever.
Money
we're like
society.
Whatever how am I forgetting a basic economic scarce, whatever is scarce in the 32nd century. But I gotta say, like, the first quarter of that episode, though, was very different than the rest of it. The rest of the episode turned into kind of a... Like, I've heard a lot of the cast talk about how this show is a little bit more, like, action-adventure. This season is a little bit more action-adventure, a little bit more, like, TNG, where fun things happen in certain episodes. And that's what it felt like the rest of the episode,
Well, I think it felt... I appreciated that... They still had to throw in the, if this gets into the wrong hands, this can be universe ending, right? Because they just can't help themselves. But
like, just have it be a cool thing.
Right. But even though they had that and they said that in the, you know, they said something to that effect a couple of times, the feel of it was that they were excited to go on this adventure. Like, this is something they're like they're looking forward to doing, not because they have to save all of humanity or galactity or whatever you call it when it's a whole bunch of different species. But, you know, it's just like a cool, hey, this is pretty cool and we want to be part of it and this is exciting. And it's kind of like a puzzle they have to solve or a mystery or, so that feels fun.
It's like a Pirates of the Caribbean sort of.
So we get two new characters introduced first, Maul and Laak, or Laak. How do you say this? I didn't.
I forget where the apostrophe is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter because it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
It's just a random apostrophe for no reason.
Yeah. They're aliens and they're different. And so they're bouncing around an 800-year-old ship, which again, just for humor's sake, I will say that Romulan technology, extraordinarily resilient. Like, looks like the day the ship was marooned, you go on board. And they are poking around, like, I think they did a good job, the like people who made the episode, are making it feel a little bit like a great heist movie. And I kind of like that. I like it. And then our crew basically become the detectives in the heist movie.
So that reminds me, when we first get onto the Romulan ship, I think it's on the Romulan ship, they're wearing those helmet things. Did we see helmets like that in Picard? Was that like, remember the first episode of season 3 of Picard? The there were aliens that were on the Beverly's ship, and they had some kind of if they weren't like those helmets, there was something about them that reminded me, because I was like, I feel like we saw this in Picard, but that's like, you know, 800 years removed. But I don't know. And there also, I was trying to remember if the, I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but the Romulan puzzle box, if that was, did we see one of those on Picard in the first season?
I'll look up the answers to these questions.
Ashley or it like played Lower into, Decks had may, a puzzle box.
Well, and I was also thinking, I feel like,
because wasn't there Picard.
Wasn't there an episode of Picard where it was almost like they were in the puzzle box? Like there was some sort of...
Marek likes to use a Tan Zikran as personal thinking aids, much to the annoyance of his less patient sister, Narissa. Upon the completion of their mission, Narek attempted to kill Soji by locking her in a Zalmok chamber with a Tan Zikran.
Yep. Okay, that's what I'm remembering.
Released a deadly radioactive gas upon opening.
Oh, yes.
That's what I was remembering. Okay. So I just felt like there were a few Picard callbacks that happened in this episode, so...
The Romulan world building in Picard was awesome, but those two characters that you just reminded me of, I had successfully forgotten about. That was like close to the low point for Picard. It's like, why were they even there? But it, like,
why are they like lovers but siblings?
Yeah,
I watched too much Game of Thrones.
To me, and I'm not saying they shouldn't do stuff like this, I get worried that Trek is in the same place Star Wars is in, with like every single thing needs to be a reference to something else from Trek. And it's not that references are bad, but I need them to be like, I need the show to really be about itself, because like the cool thing about Trek is not when it's a reference to something else, it's when it's doing something exciting and like, you know, hitting its themes.
Unless it's Picard season 3, in which case, like, give me as many references as you can shove into this thing, because I just want it to be season 8 of TNG.
Speaking of references, one of the ones that we get in this episode, which is really interesting, is Rainer. So Rainer, we get to see him while Burnham... So there's this extended action sequence where Burnham's on top of the ship. She fights with Rainer about, like... And that's the theme of the first episode, that Rainer and Burnham kind of have different approaches to being a captain of a starship and solving problems. And Rainer is a Kelloran, which, have you all watched the episode that the Kelloran species shows up in DS9? Do you know what I'm talking about yet?
I was trying to pinpoint what species he was, but
I thought he was a Vulcan with like different ears or something.
Yeah, he just
was,
like,
yeah, it was,
when he was young, he's happened. Like rebelled against his parents by like getting some modifications. No, it's from the Armageddon game. It's the 13th episode of the second season of DS9. O'Brien and Bashir help rid two races of their biological weapons. However, both governments want to ensure no technical knowledge of the weapons can survive. I have no memory of this episode at all.
Yeah, I don't either.
But that's where so his species is kind of a little bit of a deep cut, and I would argue it's probably not random, because we do get a little bit of like, hey, this technology can be like world ending if it's a
biological weapon, it seems biological weapon adjacent, so maybe he's gonna have some sort of connection.
But as we can probably guess, Rainer was dropped into Texas and grew up Southern, because he seems to be like, you know, your random loose cannon detective from like any sort of TV show.
The Texan Rojenkos.
Okay, this is
lots of planets have a south.
This is a total aside, but I was just watching the Center Seat episode about Enterprise, and Connor Trinneer was talking about like the backstory for Trip, and he just like they told him he was a good old Southern boy, so that's the accent that he used because he's like from Illinois or something, or I don't know, he's from some place that just has a bland, yeah, not a, yeah, particularly kind of, you know, striking accent. And so he did a Southern accent, and then in what, season three, he finds out he's from Florida, and he's like, what? And they're like, don't worry about it, no one will notice. He's like, people from Florida are gonna notice, they're gonna be mad at me because I didn't do the accent right. Anyway, I just thought that was just reminded me of that. So
pretty,
you know,
funny.
I think that, yeah, I it feels like you don't pick a species like that for this kind of a character and have it not be. So now I need to go back and watch that episode that I don't remember at all and see if there's anything
illuminating. I think Deep Space Nine, like seasons 1 through 3, are the only potential Star Trek episodes that I have not seen. I might have seen all of them, but it's possible that there are some there because I have not done the, like, from episode 1 through episode whatever of
I don't think
Deep
that's
Space
true,
Nine.
Adam. I think you and I watched them together.
We watched like the last half. I don't think we I don't think we did it for the for
oh,
seasons
I don't
1
know.
Through 3.
I remember watching them like on the way to Minnesota or something in the car. Yeah. Anyway. But
so we get another reference on this in this episode to Star Trek Nemesis, this time with our little dune buggies.
Oh, yeah.
And before that we get a reference to Data with
Bizarro
Fred.
Data.
Yeah, Bizarro Data.
Yeah.
Fred the Android. The is it? It's not the
Wait,
first. Yeah, go ahead.
They at least explicitly call him a synth. It's possible he's not a. Although the, wait, they did they say?
He's
no,
basically
he's
a bootleg. Like he's a bootleg.
Brain is made by someone that.
Yeah.
Because they had Alton Soon, right? Or
yeah, because later they basically find his serial number and has a reference to Alton Soong in it. So it's kind of my reading of the situation, or maybe there's dialogue on this, is that basically he's like a inspired by.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was pretty cool because it's one of those things where like they call him Fred, like that's gonna be something, like it has to be some sort of reference to something.
Yeah,
what
Fred
are, like, the
is
cool
dead
thing?
No.
But like there has to be some sort of connection or whatever, and I'm like okay, who would still be like around or whatever, who would have a thing? And then like I feel like it was well done, where I mean I got it maybe like 5.5 seconds in or something like that. I think they then kept hammering it home in case you like forgot about Data, and so I was kept looking for like the telltale android things, and they held off on them for a little while, but it was just cool seeing someone like, I'm like, oh, your hair is weird. Wait, your eyes. Uh-oh.
So our also I forgot to mention, Book's back, and it's awkward with Burnham. Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason for bringing him on the episode.
Why is it awkward exactly? I didn't feel like season 4 ended with them not.
Well,
because
he.
Which
took...
of us has not had a partner try to kill us and like set off a thermo whatever nuclear device and like, you know, commit mass murder, like.
But then I thought it was all forgiven
thing.
When
it
was he
all
was
for, right.
when he was fake killed.
No, yeah, it, like he's a different person now. He can't be held responsible for the crimes when he was the first person.
And
he's
a hero by the end of season 4, right? Like he gets those analogy for oil drilling aliens to not metaphorically oil drill in the galaxy anymore.
I'll say this. I actually, while I think it's a little, their dialogue with each other is a little awkward and cringe, like I'm having a little bit of trouble with it, I'll be perfectly honest with you guys. But I do like that they're not just back to old time's sake and like Burnham's like, hey, remember that time you tried to kill everybody? We're good. Don't worry. Like, I forgive you. Like, it's still like a little weird. They're not together.
That
anymore.
Would be the Star Trek way, though, is yes. Yeah. As long as you're not Tom Paris, you get no punishments ever.
Right. It's not like George Job, for example. So, yeah. So it is a little weird. I do wonder how this is going to resolve. Like, well, we all know how it's going to resolve. They're going to get back together. It would be weird if they didn't. But it's just, it's nice to see the way that they introduce the character back. It does seem like they have a little bit of like a difference of opinion now. They're not quite on the same page mm-hmm. about everything, which is going to be interesting as well.
You know, I also appreciate, so it's easy, I think, after five seasons or four seasons for us to forget that relationships were a totally unknown territory for Burnham before Ash Tyler. And so how awkward it was for her when she first started to be in a relationship with him. And then, so Book is just her second relationship, and we kind of get hints of like, she doesn't know how to be with this. Like when she's, we kind of get some of that stuff with, in the second episode when she's talking with Saru. I'm not spoiling anything, but just some of the conversation that they had, you just kind of like, oh yeah, she doesn't really know how to do this very well. Like she just doesn't have a lot of experience, in her years of life that kind of tell her how to navigate these kinds of situations.
I think that makes sense when you say it. And I think the reason that's hard for me to process is because the way the show is written, Michael Burnham is always having these deep, immediate heart to hearts with like everyone. And I love that stuff. But she seems to have extremely high emotional IQ, right? Like the EQ, to where it then feels strange. It's like random alien, she's there with them. Saru, she's there with them. Tilly, you know, and then you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, I don't know how to talk to a guy, you know. So to me, I think what you're saying makes sense. It feels a little whiplashy, I guess, for me. Yeah,
I think that can be true. I think that there are definitely people like that, though. Yeah. They can turn it on and know how to interact with all kinds of people in all kinds of scenarios, but then you get them in their personal life and they have not got a clue. It's too close and too personal, which makes sense because she was raised on Vulcan and probably taught to suppress some of those things. So the whole first season is her trying to come to terms with her human side, right? But anyway,
I can see it.
And I feel like we've at least seen some example of Vulcans, like maybe not understanding relationships that are like happening to them, but they might make like a very like too real comment about someone else's personal relationship with like their father or whatever. They just call out something super direct and I think I can still see the possibilities there of like how that could be consistent, but in a lot of ways it does feel like they kind of regret the backstory for Burnham and are just going with like full emotion stuff because it's worked well since they started leaning into that more.
Yeah. I will say across both of these episodes though, this is the most like confident and like not. Like, Burnham just seems like she's enjoying what she's doing mm-hmm. versus it being some, like, grave obligation or, like, right. some, like, you know, obstacle that is just, like, causing her deep distress. So it's, I like that we're seeing Burnham just kind of have fun and be a good captain.
Mm-hmm.
Which, one of the places where we kind of see a little bit of frustration seep in is in her relationship with Rainer. So I just want to, like, get your takes on, like, how y'all are feeling about the like Rainer Burnham dynamic, or maybe we should talk about this during the second episode. Sorry, Adam.
I think we should.
Yeah. So we should hold it for that.
A lot
maybe.
Of
okay.
There, yeah.
But you know, I do want to say, and this gets, not revealed. This gets touched on in the first interaction between Burnham and Rainer when she's on the ship, trying to get into the ship and he's got it with the tractor beam. I did appreciate the shade that they threw on past iterations of Burnham, always needing to be the hero and be the person who, like, you know, when she's like yelling at Rainer, like, you don't have to be the one to save it. It's like, I've read your file. Speak for yourself. You know, like, I appreciated that they recognized what they have done with the character of Burnham having to be the sole person who fixes everything and saves everything. And
Book made a reference to that on the speeder bike thing as well. He's like, who does that sound like? Yeah.
I appreciated that. I thought that was. I
could see this season being like the opportunity for Burnham to maybe step outside of that a little bit and see the sort of the value in having. I mean she's all about sort of the emotionality of like connecting with your friends and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But like I think this one might maybe we're gonna prove to her that like Rainer can can handle this or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and if it's like, this is season 5 of Discovery, whereas Discovery gets self-awareness.
But so one of the other cool set pieces of the first episode is the Antares and Discovery, like, planting themselves and, like, stopping the avalanche with their, like, energy shields. And it's one of those cool Star Trek set piece moments, right? We've seen a lot of, like, Star Trek starship saucers hit the ground, and it's typically led to a crash, and this one was, like, a intentional kind of thing. Wanted to get your takes on that whole action set piece, if it, like, worked for you guys. How'd y'all feel?
I mean, I like looking at starships, but I didn't see the point in that entire sequence, to be honest. Like, it's just, like, I mean, yeah, we show that the enemies are dangerous and they don't care about people or whatever, but it just, it felt like we had millions of dollars to burn.
Well, and I just don't even see how it would have been. It felt like the avalanche took a whole lot longer to reach that town than it should have. Like, it seemed like it should have.
Yeah.
Like, they had an awfully long time to get to that point where they planted their ships in the ground to make a force field to stop it.
It was a little hand wavy and all that, how that whole thing went down, but it also reinforced, I think, that our two criminals are very smart. We learn in the second episode that they were couriers, and so they've got all these tricks up their sleeve. You know, in the first episode we see them trying to do that, like, warp trace thing, which, if you want hand wavy, by the way, the fact that Book can come in and be like, "Hey, when I think really hard, I can solve the problem here." Elementary, my dear Watson.
He didn't even, like, narrow it down to, like, it would probably be in among these three. These seem like the most likely ones. It's just like, this is the only one that doesn't go to Federation space or something like that.
So for the speeders with the avalanche. This gets to my, like, over-explaining issue and, like, after-explaining, where I felt like Michael Burnham was a character in an anime where she's having to, like, narrate everything that I can see happening. She's like, oh, and now that you've tried to shoot it, they've got an idea, now they're firing. Like, it was way too much. Like, I have eyes, thank you. I can see, like, and you could have made that point later. It was so much over-explaining on what's happening in the action. You can just, especially when you've spent $10 million on it, you know, let me see it. It's okay. I can probably figure it out. But every single bit had to be, like, completely explained while it's happening. So.
Yeah. I agree. And as soon as Malin Locke got away, the whole thing about the avalanche, it was, I just knew that it was going to be inconsequential for the larger plot. I get that feeling a lot with Discovery and kind of with modern Star Trek in general. Like, sometimes I'll, because of the writing or whatever, I'll just be like, okay, like, I know the next 15 minutes are going to be inconsequential for the larger show. And okay, they're doing it so that Burnham and Rayner can bond or something. Like, what? And if I was really invested in the characters or something, I think I wouldn't notice. Right. I think I'd be totally with it and be like, oh, the avalanche and the, you know, but like, they just don't pull it off with me anyway. But I did think the ships, I thought that looked cool. The avalanche
walk-in.
It did look cool. No. Yeah.
At Paramount. No, like, notes, yes, on how cool it looks. good job.
Well, really quick, we got a small amount of backdoor pilot for Starfleet Academy with Tilly having this weird kind of conversation with Jax, one of her fellow teachers or whatever.
I thought that was a good example of Star Trek not doing the thing that Reed said. It's just like, it's just like, she looks, yes, across the room, she's like, he's really hot, and then it's just like, for some reason, it's awkward date and they're gonna get married territory or something, but, like, I don't even know who the hell this guy is, and we didn't explain who the hell he is, except, like, maybe he's a teacher or something. Where even are we? And I, like, forgot they weren't on Discovery.
Which is, yeah, yeah.
I didn't have any context, and it felt like they cut out an episode where she was, like, had the whole meet-cute thing or whatever, yeah, with him, and it was instead just, like, we just cut to, like, three quarters of the way through the rom-com, And like, that's where we are.
And I'm not encouraging them to do that either, you know?
Yeah. Like,
well, one full episode of season 5 dedicated to Tilly and this dude, like, going on dates.
which, okay, with the Tilly thing, she is like so drunk off of the, you know, the...
Andorian
something.
Champagne?
And you guys are mentioning that they're drunk and then they're doing... But no one on Discovery felt tipsy. And then it felt like it had been a while since I had seen Tilly. And then she's there and she's all like, and I was like, wait, did that just happen? What is the time lapse here? And how long is she, you know, that was really confusing to me in that moment.
Like, at least we can explain Discovery, like maybe it was Synth Hall. And so they just like turned it off. And since Tilly wasn't doing anything important, she didn't have to turn it off until she hacked the mainframe. Or whatever.
And that was really funny to me. Tilly has just started hacking it and immediately people come in to like say, you can't go in that. That felt very comedic.
So that sequence I actually kind of enjoyed, because also like Vance coming in and being like, hello, you seem to be doing something wrong. Let me help. I kind of liked it. I was kind of, you know, I think, so I'll say this. I think I said before that in the first quarter, I was like, Discovery's on its shit again. It's going to be a crap season. I think around the halfway mark where I was like, wait a minute. This shit is good. Like, I'm enjoying this. Like, and, you know, I wish I didn't have to have a moment like that. But, like, I had the same one in Picard in the second season where I was like, you know, okay, some of this is good. And then in the second episode of Discovery, I just to kind of complete the circle, I was really like, this is just great Star Trek. And so I just want to give, like, I have talked my fair amount of shit about Star Trek Discovery in my life. And I just want to say, like, I'm pretty excited about next week's episode and, like, seeing where the season goes, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. It feels good. Finally, let's just kind of finish off the first episode so that we can send Adam on his good way. Unless you want to stick around, you do whatever you want. I don't control your life yet. but we have basically then Discovery comes back to Dry Dock and they Kovich and Burnham have their like, you know, moment where we're like, oh no, it's the chase episode. How do y'all feel about this story being based on the Progenitors and the chase episode? Is that something where y'all were like, oh, this episode needs some more? You're excited about it? What are your thoughts?
So I'll jump in. I think it's cool. I think if you're going to do a callback to 90s Trek, this is a good one to do. But my issue is with the original episode from TNG. I just hate when they try to create in-universe explanations for, like, I hate the whole augment Klingon thing from Enterprise. It's like, you guys, it's just because it was made in the 60s and the makeup is different. That's good enough for me. I don't really need like a 5-part series about some virus or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the Progenitor thing is kind of like that. It's like, why do all the aliens look like humans with rubber on their forehead? Well, there's the soul, like, plot about why it's like that. It's I don't really need that.
It was once an alien with rubber on their head, and so
you're right.
Yeah, I think that makes sense to me. Like, it kind of what it's feeling like is when I've like I would almost want it to be like foundational to all of Star Trek or something. Like if like in the beginning we had set up as like part of the intrigue of like in the first series was like that there was a progenitor species and that sort of like how this like the galaxy got created in the way that it was, but like because it's just like a rando thing that we introduced in like the 7th episode of the 5th season of something or other and then it's never referenced ever again, it's like a it feels like we're just explaining something that did not need explaining at all. Like a counterexample to that is that I feel like is good as like the and maybe it's not fully applicable, but in stuff like the Expanse, they have there are like backstory things for that like set up the entire world that deal with progenitor type things and whatnot, and I feel like that ends up being like a cool setting as opposed to this is just sort of like a forgotten bit of random lore.
Well, this is also like literally Battlestar Galactica, which Callum Keith Rennie was on, right? As one of the Cylons.
Spoiler.
It's like basically BSG explains the presence of humans on Earth, right? Like So it's kind of a little bit of like a fun meta reference there if you think about it.
And I agree completely, Bill, because I don't know that I needed that explanation of how all these life forms got, but if you already have it, it works as a great MacGuffin for this to then have a, like, oh, we should look into that. So as far as, and again, I'm not reference happy, but if you're going to do something, that feels like a better one to do.
Well, and they're structuring it very similarly to how that episode was structured.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And we see that especially going into the next episode. But they're, so they're definitely, they're pulling a lot now from that episode.
It's meta, the structure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, anything else to talk about with episode one that we're missing yet?
Saru's engagement.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was a nice, awkward scene of intimacy.
Yeah. So we had three awkward relationship scenes here, and this is the third set with Saru and Vulcan lady, whose name I'm not forgetting.
Why am I forgetting? Trina.
Trina. Thank you. Trina. In the first one, she's like, "No, you must make your decision without me. Be all stoic, this and that." Which I was like, "What are you talking about?" Like, damn, cold-blooded, which maybe actually, I don't know. but then they have the scene later where she's like, "Yay, I was wishing you'd do that," which is sweet and nice.
I know that we've had like set up stuff for that between the two of them in Discovery in the previous, maybe both previous seasons. Maybe some of it is just like I didn't watch the previous season of Discovery like in the past couple weeks, but like I felt like we skipped over a bunch of like I wanted more cute episodes of them like maybe liking each other or like getting into the early relationship, and I feel like the end of last season in my recollection was more like, oh, okay, they're going to start having beginning of relationship stuff, but they've been having a relationship all over summer, and so we just didn't get to see any of it, and so now we're like married, but like I don't know, I wanted to see more cute relationship things, and it feels like they took that away from us because we don't have enough episodes per season, and so they're just going to be married now.
Ashley Joe, that's the next step, of course, you just immediate marriage.
Yeah.
So I think that's all for episode one. I think we can get to some strange new ratings now. Which of you like to stick your necks out and go first?
I'm afraid because of how you are going to feel, Notch. So I will go first.
I'll go first. I can go first if you want me to. Do you want me to? Would that make you happier?
No, I can go first. Yeah.
All right, cool.
It's a 2.5.
Holy shit!
I know. And it wasn't.
Is this out of 10 or is this out of 5?
It's out of 5, yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, look, in terms of Trek ratings, nothing. And I don't, other than maybe the examples episode, very few could get that low because I've seen the original series. So I know the depths of how bad a Trek episode can get. So,
yes.
No. Out of 5, yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I can give you that. I will go next. I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5. No, I don't do 4 out of 5 ratings. You confused me.
4 out of 10.
I am going to give this an 8 out of 10. It was not like a, wow, what a great episode. But it left me looking for more and excited to like check it out. I liked the action. Yes, there were some things where I was like, ugh. But you know what? That's life. There are a few moments where I'm like, ugh, in a good day in my life. So 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I was going to do 4 out of 5 also. I thought it was a good, solid episode. I enjoyed it, and it had a good hook to kind of get us interested in what's going to happen in subsequent episodes. And yeah, I thought it was good.
I think I'll jump in with not exactly splitting the difference, but or maybe I am. I haven't done the math on it, but I think I'll give it a 7. It's like I think very much agree. Like I enjoyed the episode. There wasn't sort of a big like, oh, why is this happening, or like this again type stuff. It was just like it was kind of messy, and I didn't see the point of parts of it. But like I wasn't like, I was still having a good time. I like that we brought in more androids. Basically, any episode with androids is probably going to be a decent episode to me. counterexample is most of Picard, but yeah.
Okay, I'll do a 7.2. I thought it was good, like the plot they introduced, like the Tilly stuff. I just didn't, like I said before, the last like quarter of it, they kind of lost me with the Avalanche stuff. I thought that was a weak ending.
I didn't tell you all this, but now we're going to vote one of you off the podcast. Reed, you're the weak link.
You know, it was funny. I was listening to last episode and I thought, oh, they don't even want to hear my thoughts on season 3's ending with the Kelpian kid. They would hate it.
So. Did you love it?
Is that the best Star Trek that has ever
been?
No.
I didn't. But I got what they were trying to go for with it. And I don't think the issue was that they were trying to make it epic. I think that maybe they fumbled the execution, the setup. But I like the idea of like losing your mother could be something so emotionally powerful and distraught that you could have galactic implications. So I appreciated what they tried to do with it. Yeah.
Our poor mothers, since none of us seem to feel that way. No. You know, it would if something happened to me, I think Dietrich, I think, yep, dilithium would cease to exist.
Off. That's right. And what I love about Discovery is it swings for the fences. It doesn't always know how to swing, but it tries. You know? It's absolutely. Trying
I,
so hard.
I think I fully agree with that. It's a show
for effort.
Yes. It is not afraid of overstepping its bounds at all.
And in an age where sometimes things are always trying to have an ironic distance, I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I think that's a good take. But yeah, I guess you said that someone was going to get voted off the island. I believe it's me. So for not watching the second episode, I will see you all later.
You'll need to tell us what you think about Saru's long lost lover's child and how that plays.
Yeah, I will.
Sorry, spoilers.
Yeah, sorry.
You already spoiled me by telling you you enjoyed the second episode, so I'm pretty mad.
It was terrible. Okay, go watch it now.
Okay, sounds good. Bye, everybody. Bye. I'll try not to break the recording.
So, let's talk about that second episode. Under Twin Moons, which, you know, I think that is a Star Wars reference, right? Twin suns on Tatooine. Do they have twin moons or twin suns on Tatooine?
It is suns.
Yeah. So
because
now
it's not sci-fi.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do that is possible.
So this episode basically revolved around them going to an ancient burial ground and poking around for clues with Burnham and Saru. So it kind of was like a Burnham and Saru character piece for me, mostly. We had a bit of a book character piece in the background as well. And this is, again, the kind of thing that I normally hate when Discovery does. And they did it well. I really enjoyed it. There was a little bit sometimes with the Saru stuff that I was like, all right, you guys are laying it on a little thick, and if you don't kill him now, I'm going to be unhappy. But like, I think it generally was one that I enjoyed watching.
Yeah, me too. I liked the Saru stuff. Maybe a little bit over the top, but that's tonally consistent with Discovery. Sorry, one grievance. So didn't Saru's, like, I don't know, the things behind his ears with the darts that shoot out, didn't those, like, fall off when he went through Vahari?
The ganglia fall off, but we have seen those, like...
Oh,
those,
really?
Those
okay.
came because he... Like, that was the evolution.
Oh, before,
he evolved into that,
right. Okay. I was confused. Okay.
Yeah. I forget where we've seen those before, but we've seen them once before. And now I guess he got the name Action Saru from Jet Reno.
I want to see Jet Reno. Please bring Jet Reno. She better be on the next episode. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, that felt like where there could have been a lot more humor mined. And it's like almost funny with the action Saru stuff. But like, Bill, to your earlier point, like they could have done a lot more with the action Saru, because he doesn't, you know, fit that like moniker, but in some ways he sure does. So,
well, so maybe I will talk about this for a minute, if I may. So I think I've said this before, I think Michael Burnham, I think setting her up as a human who was raised on Vulcan was kind of a terrible decision. Like, I don't think that's like an easy way to craft a likable character, is to just make them like stiff and unemotional. And it works with Spock or with Data, this is like really common, right? Lots of examples in Star Trek and other fiction. If there's something like actually, like, if you could poke fun at them, if there's something lovable, if it's like the whole thing is like, oh, I'm this really stiff, like, you know, I don't know, unfriendly person, but actually underneath that there's something much softer. But so we get a little bit of that with Saru, because Saru is like pretty dignified dude, and so the action Saru thing, I mean, they do kind of poke fun at him a little bit sometimes. And even like Picard, you know, they'll poke fun at him from time to time. And Shatner in the movies, not so much in the original series, but they definitely have fun with Shatner. They never have fun with Burnham. I mean, ever. I don't know why they don't try.
I think, yeah, there is I think they've kind of fallen into this trap of like creating a character that has just so much pain and kind of distress that they can't, like, it maybe even just feels wrong to like introduce kind of humor into that area. I hope they do what you're suggesting, and they kind of, I think they've achieved their goals of creating a fully fledged captain who like has the inherent dignity where they can now do that. I think you're right. I really appreciated, by the way, it's on a kind of a parallel line, this episode's dialogue between Burnham and Saru was powerful, because the two of them have such a long history. Yeah. So they were talking about their past and how far they've come. It really made me think of like how Saru responded to her when she walked onto the bridge with Lorca, and he was just like, what the hell is she doing here? Mm-hmm. And how far they've both come. So it was kind of like a good send-off. I don't know if it's going to be a send-off for Saru, but if it is, I thought it worked well.
Yeah. I mean, they can't get rid of Saru.
They can't get rid of him, but I know that the actor here, Doug Jones, has mentioned that he's not going to do any more alien creatures or whatever anymore in his acting career. He's done, like, being a creature actor.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Isn't Discovery, this is its last season?
Yeah.
So. It is. But he's also known for doing creature roles just generally, right, quite a lot, right? And there was a news article posted to the Star Trek subreddit where he said, like, basically that or it suggested that that's it for him in creature roles.
Terror to doing the makeup.
Yeah.
I mean, could you imagine with all the Saru stuff? That would be hard.
Yeah, well, I also just think, he's such a good actor, and it's a shame that there are a lot of things he hasn't gotten recognition for in some ways, because people don't look at him and say, oh, he's the guy that did this, this, and this. So it'll be kind of exciting to see him do things looking like himself, you know, like,
well, you'll remember the season 3 episode where he was human for a little bit or whatever. I don't know how much fun that was. I'm kind of curious to see where they go with him now that he's like going to be off the ship and Rayner's taking his place as the first officer. Like, what's that going to lead to? Does that mean he pops in for 5 minutes every episode on a VidCom, or like, it's going to be interesting.
Well, I mean, they've made it. I thought Tilly was going to be gone, and now she's not. So, you know, this is Star Trek. They always find ways to bring your your beloved characters back.
Mr. Worf, would you like to be on the weapons again?
Exactly. That's exactly who I was thinking of.
One last adventure before the next one. Right.
In one of those movies, they seriously, like, the movie starts and they're like, oh, but before we do anything, we've got to go swing by Deep Space Nine to pick up Mr. Worf. And he's like, do it.
and the guy who's like the new weapons officer is like, come on, what kind of like vote of confidence is this? Something important is going to happen. That guy isn't up to it. Like, we need to go pick up
this. There's only one guy.
Yeah, and so I think that's I think like my favorite part of this episode was that's Burnham Saru stuff, and the action that they get onto on the planet. I think visually also the planet that they were on was kind of neat. They did a good job of kind of laying it out. Although I gotta say, again, it's like we have an away mission on a planet, and guess what? The thing we're looking for is behind a field that makes transport difficult. It's just like the most overused Star Trek thing in the world. Like, sorry, we can't beam you back up.
Well, it's because beaming, unfortunately, could make things so boring. Like, beam down, grab, beam up, episode. You know, credits.
Yeah. Just beams the intruders off the ship.
Right. Like, it's terrible for the writers. Yeah. And it, just to look backwards for 10 seconds here, that was my complaint with the speeder bikes and the, like, why didn't they just transport there? They didn't even try to explain it.
They said there was, didn't they say that all the dust had created?
Oh, really? Okay.
Very quickly. Yeah.
I mean, that's why the transporters are always broken, right? Because
it's always something.
Yeah.
So, one of the other things that happens on this, as you mentioned, Emily, before, was that we have Tilly coming back on the ship doing like science stuff with Adira. And we find out that this is the first time Adira and Gray have been apart. And I was wondering, like, does that mean that Gray's character is not going to be on this season of Discovery?
Yeah, I don't know. Because that's not a character once they had him go off, I don't think they've brought him back, have they?
Is he supposed to be on Trill?
Oh, on Trill. So then they can do it in the next
season. They're going next episode.
I couldn't remember. I don't even remember what they did with him. So,
Because he became real because they gave him the like synth body, right?
Yeah, he got to be a real boy.
Yeah, so it kind of like is one of those things where they had some stuff last season, if I recall, but I don't remember like what
with Zora, right? Weren't they?
Yeah. And he was in like the 10th episode of the 4th season. So yeah, I'm not 100% sure like whether this is like a, because the other thing is Bryce hasn't been in these two episodes either, if y'all have noticed. Mm-hmm. So there have been some like minor cast changes. Like Bryce was in and out of last season as well.
But they explained he went to go do something. I can't remember what it is, but they had him exit the show last season.
Right. Exactly. So it'll be interesting to see if Gray comes back. I just want to point to that one. But then we had these like two, you know, scientists solving the problem. It was kind of an interesting dynamic where Burnham and Saru are kind of facing these issues with the electromagnetic field with these drones, and then Ardita and Tilly have to like come up with a solution like on the fly, and then Raynor has been monitoring their comms and shows up.
I thought that was the best Raynor stuff. I really was like not understanding his character at all until then. Like, it felt like they wanted him to be a thing but weren't doing enough to make him a thing, and that helped round him out a little bit.
His experience basically gives him a really good set of like instincts on how to deal with the problem.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's kind of like, you guys think logically, you know, what kind of, you know, power system would they have had 2,000 years ago or whatever. But man, this is so common in science fiction. Like writers misunderstanding time, like the scale of time, right? So like in the 2,000 years means nothing. Right. It's like, oh, they, you know, their technology couldn't have been that advanced 2000 years ago. It's like the scale of time and the universe is like so unfathomable, you know, like they could have had you know, the most advanced technology ever, you know, a million years ago, or, you know,
which Star Trek has done countless times. Like the animated series, they find a extinct thing that's from 100 million years ago that's way more advanced than they are, and he keeps saying "obey me" and zaps them, and then there's that TNG episode with that fallen empire and the Ferengi, and they ask Riker should we get rid of him, and he's like, "Nah, we'll keep him." I mean, so Trek knows, yeah, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that, I mean, maybe, you know, you can explain it away by saying, oh, maybe they also come from the progenitors, and so they couldn't be more than X thousands of years old or whatever. I don't know. But this is, I mean, it's a nitpick, and it's super common in sci-fi.
The other thing that happens in this episode, the third kind of theme of our plot, is Booker comes back onto the ship, which is pretty neat. I liked it, and I think there was a world in which they could have done a really poor job with this, where he just comes back and like does a bunch of stuff and solves problems. Instead, they have him show up and they bring in Culber to be like, "How you doing, man?" Mm-hmm. Which, from a strictly professional standpoint, a counselor like acting that way to his counselee, a little weird. Two friends, more acceptable, but I'll let that go and just be like, I just love the scene where Culber's, where Book's like, "Hey, how you doing?" He's trying to be all stoic, like, dude who's not vulnerable, and Culber's just like, "Give me a hug, big bear." And I just loved how throughout the episode, Culber's not letting it go, and he's like, he's asking, like, he's like checking up on this dude.
Mm-hmm. Well, because there's still obviously trauma, right? Like, that doesn't go away just because you are relocating refugees from the DMA, and because you got killed by the DMA and rematerialized by the DB. There's lots of trauma endured. I like Culber. I don't know. I just feel like I just like him. I like that he is trying to get people to examine. That's one of the things they don't do on Star Trek, but they do a lot on Discovery, which I appreciate. You know, they don't really get into feelings that much on Star Trek, except for Star Trek Generations, when Picard's son or brother and nephew are killed. They kind of start to talk about it a little bit, like, how is this impacting you? But, you know, not really talking in, like, how did being assimilated by the Borg impact you? You know, like, just mm-hmm. keep going. So I appreciate that. And I think, yeah, anyway. And it's just also, I think maybe it was a good reminder to Book, like, there are a lot of people on the ship that care about you. Like, it's not just Michael. Like you were part of this crew for a while, so.
Well, I think that's the thing, right? Like, it adds a little bit of, like, depth to Book's scenes. It gives him a little bit more complexity than just, like, this dude is coming back on the ship now, everybody. He's part of the crew again. And it's, mm-hmm. like, and it's not the, like, tropey, like, the way Burnham was treated in the first few episodes of Discovery, where it's like, ugh, why is she back? Like, that would have been the easy way to handle it, right? Like, why is this criminal back? Instead, we get this thing of Culber being like, I'm really happy you're here, and are you mm-hmm. doing okay? So it kind of subverts our expectations a little bit, and I really like that.
Well, and it's also, I mean, like, with Burnham, no one really understood what was behind her quote-unquote mutiny, right? That mm-hmm. took place in the first episode of Discovery. But everyone understood what was behind Book's actions in season 4. Like, there was no mystery as to, oh, how could he do this? No, we all know how he could do this. Like something major happened right before his eyes that was devastating. And that leads people to do pretty sometimes heinous things, you know?
Yeah. And then Book kind of gets in touch with Maul and Locke about, like, them being couriers and trying to offload the book. I'll be honest, I didn't really understand that scene very much. It might have been because I was watching it very late at night. Yeah. And I wanted to see if you all had, like, a take on whether you thought that was effective.
It was confusing. I was definitely like, I got what he's going. I'm like, oh, maybe they'll just cut and get the money from the book. And he knows that. But, and he's even like, well, they took the call, so clearly they won. But then they really didn't even want to talk about it. It felt a little forced to be able to get him to talk with them and to really the plot point of the big reveal for him with her. Yeah.
That she's the daughter of his mentor, right? Is that what it was?
Yeah, Cleveland Booker.
Yeah.
which is, I thought that was very slick, because she has a reaction, so you're like, oh, mm-hmm. did he do something to her? And then he like de-ages her, and you're just like, what is happening? And then you realize, oh, she thinks he like assumed her father's name, and was trying to like get a rise out of her,
right? Whereas he doesn't realize that when he says his name, he doesn't know that that's going to have any impact on her, but he does notice that it has an impact on her.
Yeah.
I did like the part where it's like, you can tell she's reacted to that. And then I did not love the part where then it's like, and this was again, going back to my larger issue with Discovery, where then he's like, here's a bunch of backstory that I'm just going to like offload on you. When there could have been a flashback, or we could have gotten a little more, or saved that for later. I don't know. And maybe, like, is there stuff I'm forgetting about his mentor that I should know and remember from previous stuff? Because that felt so like, whoa, that's a lot of info really quick.
We haven't really got much about his mentor in the past. Like, it's been very like kept on the DL. So this, I really like that we're going there, because it's been always like a curious question since season 3, right? Like, who is this guy? Right. Like, where did he come from? Like, that the thing about his name is one of the earliest mysteries, and we're gonna solve it this season, which I'm excited about. So now let's get to the meat of this before we kind of go into ratings, which is the episode revolves around having this kind of mystery that the Romulans left on this planet with those four pieces of dialogue, and then the fifth, or the poetry, and then the fifth piece of poetry is under the structure, and then they get the little puzzle piece. What y'all think about like how they, so now this, it's basically become a puzzle piece finding mystery, right? Like, it's kind of like Knights of the Old Republic 1.
Oh yeah,
the game. Yeah. wanted to see how y'all reacted to that whole thing.
I like it. I think it's fun.
I like the idea. I didn't love the execution of it with this specific episode, but I do. I really find the idea of having to do this puzzle finding mission to be such a cool way to execute a space adventure. So it's like, I want to like it more than I felt like I was enjoying it. Not that I hated it, but there's a lot there that you could do. Yeah.
And also it is literally Knights of the Old Republic 1, where they have to find different pieces of a star map to find the like, the in Knights of the Old Republic 1, they call it the Star Forge, where basically the remnants of the Sith are creating a magic armada. So
it was a great game. Yeah.
It was my favorite game of all time. So I think it is the greatest video game ever made, to be honest with you. But and you know what? Maybe that's why I like this story as well. I think it's super fun. I loved when they like got like basically a 3D print, or programmable matter print, and they put the little piece in, and I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was cool.
So next episode, they're going to Trill.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the exact rationale for that, but I just remember Saru saying, opaline waters, for the second time, right? He used the word opaline.
It
was in the transcription, right?
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Like, that was part of the poem.
Okay, got it. Okay.
And so, again, I think this is a situation in which there's a little bit of like convenient stuff happening, where Dieter's just like, yes, I know the answer, and it turns out to be right. But I also like that we're not spending an hour and a half like searching the galaxy for the answer, and we're just going there, and we're going from set piece to set piece and having fun, which is, I think, a pleasant change of direction from, for example, season 4, where they had to go into a casino for an entire episode to like figure out the answer to a problem.
Well, and it makes sense that Adira would be able to come up with the answer really quickly. Like, they've already laid enough. That's one example where they've laid the groundwork. So it was easy for them to just say, oh, Trill, you know.
It's actually got a season 2-ish energy to it, right? Like, you have the red angel dots that you have to go to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say yes, but I also don't want it to end in the same way that season like ended in terms of like quality. So
I was about to show control.
Yeah. All right. Well, anything else on the second episode under Twin Moons that you want to talk about?
I do. And it's when they're trying to get to the inscription and the drones have been knocked out and they're waiting to get booted back up. It felt like Michael Burnham and Saru were in totally different scenes in terms of like energy. Like Michael is frantic, like really frantic. Like, yeah. And then Saru's like, have you thought about this? And that was a really weird, I didn't know how to feel in that moment. Like I understood Michael's energy. And so to me, I think that's what hurt some of that execution was the pacing there from that disagreement of energy, I guess, if that makes sense at all.
I kind of attributed that to like their different like levels of experience or like just their different ways of handling situations. And I think it was a good illustration of what Saru was talking about, where he said that Burnham needs a first officer who's able to react to situations very differently than she does. Right? I didn't bump on it, I guess is my point.
Yeah, and if you didn't, then good. Because, you know, yeah. Well, and Saru used to be, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. That was something that I was feeling, but maybe that was just me.
And he was like, I think, so one thing I will say, I really thought they were going to kill Saru in this episode. I wasn't going to forgive them
really for
that. I'm usually a very like kill the character, it's okay kind of guy, but like, holy crap. Like, I really thought that when he was chasing those drones, he was running away from the drones. Like, they were setting that up for like a death.
Oh, they were, because she's even yelling, Saru, right. Saru. Yeah, yeah, that was a red herring, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it did not happen.
Yeah. And the injury that he gets in his arm that they reference a few times, I thought that was going to be, there was going to be some significance there, that would be a tie-in to something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was going to be like, oh, you've been brave and ignoring it, but it turns out you've like basically like brought a terrible pathogen on board.
Yeah,
I made that joke. I said the way they're doing that is like when a character's been shot and then they open up the thing and they're bleeding and they die. But I joked that, you know, but instead it's like a plasma that's just like a whole hole through them. But no, nothing to that degree. No.
Well, and I almost thought that his injury was not necessarily from a drone strike. It was from him falling because he had moved.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember, but I feel like it wasn't like necessarily like a bullet wound. I thought it was he fell into something because he got knocked. And so like I was thinking like dislocated shoulder or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turns out he's ineligible to be an ambassador anymore. They don't accept anyone with a hurt shoulder. That's a huge plot point.
But you can be in Starfleet, so get back on the ship.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I think we do need to talk about Burnham's new first officer.
Yes.
And I thought it was pretty brilliant. I'm really looking forward to seeing those two interact and to see Rayner become part of the crew and to grow.
Well, it's like, it was nice how Saru kind of set the stage for it. And I was like, Book, really? Really? They're going to make Book the first officer? I don't think that's the way to go. So it was, and I mean, I called the Rayner being the first officer before she even walked into there. I'm like, that's what's going to happen. He's going to be the first officer. But the reason I thought that was because of how Saru laid the groundwork, that she needed someone who was just as strong-willed as she was, who could perhaps show her a different perspective.
Right.
In terms of setup, that was really good. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I liked the whole second chances theme of that too. Like Burnham saying, look, someone gave me a second chance. I made a big mistake. Yes. And so I appreciated that. And I felt like, I thought that Burnham had, I mean, clearly, you know, she made the comment, I hate this guy or whatever, like in the previous episode, but she showed extraordinary grace in this episode. She didn't want to throw him under the bus during the inquiry. And, you know, and finally when they pushed and they said, look, you just have to tell us what happened. And then she was, you know, she said what happened and the disagreement that they had. But then afterwards, you know, she wasn't just going to say, oh, he's just an irresponsible officer or, you know, he doesn't care about other people. She didn't do any of that. Like, she kind of looked at who he was and how he's had to operate and the world that he's lived in. And anyway, I just really appreciated that. And I think more people need to walk this world that way. So
I totally agree.
I guess my question is this, though. My one fear with this is I want it to be an effective partnership. I don't want the two of them to be like fighting. And it turns out like that's the critical plot point of this season is that they have a very dysfunctional relationship. I want it to just work, but I don't know if y'all agree.
Right. Maybe it will. Well,
I want the show to have conflict, and discovery often avoids conflict. So I don't know. I kind of hope that you're wrong on that, just because sometimes discovery is like very like kumbaya. We all hold hands now. And I want that, but I want that to happen in a cathartic way. So,
but you think there wasn't there was big conflict last season with Book totally going in a different direction.
Oh, yeah. I love
they
that
were
stuff.
Trying to work, you know, yeah. I thought there was big conflict.
That was some of the best parts of last season, right? Especially once the COVID stuff ended a little bit. Yeah. No, and I liked the way they've set that up. I'm actually looking forward to that quite a bit. I know that it's kind of funny to me the way he was demoted, like he was pushed into early retirement. I get it from a plot point, but I think you all talked about this last time. Usually it feels like Starfleet people are given a huge berth to kind of make decisions, and this one it's like, I mean, he was working on a red directive for the mission. You would almost think they would be like, now, Burnham, you ignored the important thing here. You know, you can get away with a lot as a captain in Starfleet, usually.
Yeah, that part, if you think about that for a second, it's really not that believable. I mean, captains do worse stuff than that, like every third episode.
All the time.
If you're crew on the main ship, then you get a wide berth. But if you're...
If you're not a main character,
it's
then
not called
you're
the Enterprise.
Yeah. So with regards to the dynamics, I expect and hope that it's very similar to what was this Todd Stashwick character in season 3 of Picard, the captain, the grouchy captain.
Oh my God!
I love him.
With the break, I just feel like I've forgotten all of the like all this long break between Star Trek series. I've just forgotten everything. Yeah.
For which one?
Liam Shaw, Captain Shaw.
Liam Shaw. Captain Shaw. Okay.
So I think it's going to be like that. There's going to be tension. He's going to be prickly, but then he's going to kind of over time, we're going to see his soft side and they're going to end up bonding and they're going to be happy.
And that's that good stuff where they make it good. Yeah. It's not automatic. You get
there. You earn it.
You earn it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I will be happy for that. What I don't want is that it starts out well and then turns into a huge thing and Draenor steals the ship and, you know.
Oh, yes.
That would be really disappointing. Or if he was like a spy or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Like he basically becomes Book Part 2 or like that, the guy that Book conspires with. He's like, I'm just going to fix this on my own. All of y'all are idiots. Like,
the UN Secretary General. From the experience. I don't know. I can't remember his name on Star Trek, but
yeah.
The Admiral going like Rainer's like, what's the chain of command here? And the Admiral's like, I don't know. Good. You guys work that on your own. I was like, I know why from a storytelling perspective, but what a horrible decision. Like just play nice. Yeah. All right.
Oh my God. All right. Well, let's do Strange New Ratings. Who wants to stick their necks out and give Under Two Moons or to Under Twin Moons a rating?
I'll give it an 8. Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was really solid.
Yeah, I was going to go 4 out of 5 with this one too. I thought I just really thought they were both solid episodes.
Yeah, same here. What about you, Reed?
I'm going to give it 2.5 moons out of 5 moons. So,
wow,
you are tough.
I know. I liked it. Hard I did grade. Like it, you know.
He's a tough grader.
Yeah, I don't believe in Trek gradeflation, you know, like.
There you go. There you go. Harvard Trek could use somebody like you. So I just went back and looked at our ratings from early Discovery. So Discovery season 3, we had quite a bit of 8 out of 10s and 7 out of 10s. So we've started a season like this before. And what about Discovery season 4?
You hated the first episode of season four. You guys really did.
I give it a 4.5 out of 5.
What about the second episode? Of season
second
four?
Episode, I give a 5 out of 10 as well.
Okay.
And yeah, looks like Rudy gave it a 7. So yeah, we were much cooler on the season four beginning. I will say this, IMDb ratings for season four are abysmal. They're all in the 5s. Same with season 3. But season 5 so far of Discovery has like 6.5 to 7.
That's
so
good
far
for Discovery.
IMDb. So
I don't understand that for season 3. I can understand for season 4 some of it. I don't understand that for season 3. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I should be voted off of the island.
Well,
we welcome all opinions. Good.
Yeah, we're not gonna vote you off this time. All right. Well, let me cap this episode off. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Emily. Thank you, Reed. Thank you, Adam, as well, who's not here at the moment. And thank you also to Rudy, who wasn't here today. Hope he's off doing something that he's enjoying. And thank you to your listeners for taking the time to listen to our episode and make us part of your listening podcast week. Thank you, Jishan Guha, for recording our theme music. We always appreciate hearing him strum away at the Klingon theme several years ago now, as it seems. And special thanks this week to the people from that one race that built the graveyards, and the Romulans, actually, who both designed technology that could withstand hundreds of years of misuse and abuse and whatever to give us a compelling plot for this episode. You know, if they had built things just a little, if they had built things like Boeing, basically, we wouldn't have had this fun because everything would have just been dead and Burnham and Saru would have been like, oh, here we're on this planet. There's nothing threatening us. We found the thing we're looking for. 5 minutes, episode over. So, but that was not the way it went. So special thanks.
They say it's built Romulan tough. It's a set.
There you go.
Oh my gosh.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.